Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show, CJAD 800.
9:05, welcome to the Home Improvement Show. Sitting in front of me is Walter Assey, president of Renovco. How are you, Walter?
I'm doing great.
How was your week?
My week was busy and fantastic, as usual.
Busy and fantastic is what we want. Before we get to all of your renovation questions, by the way, I want to remind you of the phone numbers, 514-790-0800, 514-790-0800. Our text line is also a place where you can send in the questions, 514-800. Remember to include your name so we know who we're talking to. Before we get to that, I did miss a celebration on Weekends with Joanne Vraca. So happy 70th birthday, Mom and Gigi. We love you so much. We hope your birthday has been special. You deserve it. Love from Aiden, Matt, Catherine, and Marianne and your grandchildren. So happy birthday. Happy 70th birthday there. So, Walter, do you have any celebrations? Listen, but no. Okay, let's get to the meat and potatoes of the show here, because we already have some questions coming in. Again, 514-790-0800 for the calls. Okay, this is the first question on the text line, though, 514-800. Good morning. I'm having a complete bathroom renovation, is the question. The bath is being replaced with an alcove composite shower base. Given that the shower base is a mixture of polyurethane resin and marble powder, is it necessary to use waterproofing such as Schluter under the base, or can the waterproofing be installed just on the walls? This comes to you, Walter, from Paul from Brossard.
It's a great question. So the base itself, pretty much what he's saying in lame words, it's a stone base or a quartz base, or so it is a waterproof base. It's the same installation if you want to simplify it, like you would have in an acrylic base, meaning you don't need to, the base itself is waterproof. You don't need to prepare it. What is tricky about installation of that base, you want to make sure that is adequately installed and reinforced, because it's a heavier base. You want to make sure that it drains well, okay? And the most important element would be the membraning of the walls, okay? Specifically between the junction, between the actual base and the wall itself. So that's where I would go with Schluter panels on the walls. And the base itself, you don't need to do anything to waterproof, because it does come waterproof. So there's no issues there whatsoever. The only issue that we've seen with bases like this is inadequate installation. It's not as, even with acrylic bases we see all the time, it's not adequately supported. It's, not draining well, or it's flimsy where the drains are, so it gets to leak and what have you. With these things, with the quartz bases or the stone bases, the good thing about them is they're solid enough not to have that give at the drain area. So, if someone is taking a shower and they're fairly heavy set, it won't have that vibrational move that you have that water trickling. So that's a positive with these bases. The only thing that he needs to worry about is whoever is installing it have installed it before.
Okay.
Because it's not the same installation as an acrylic, if you wish, base.
Okay. We have another question here on the text line. Reminder, 514-790-0800. Call in with your questions for Walter Assey. We have one on the text line here, 514-800. It says, hi, Walter and Joanne. I'm looking into switching from oil to electric heating. Aside from price and warranties, are there any other things to consider in order to make the best choice amongst estimates? This is from Ian.
There's a lot to consider, yes. There is the as far as heat pumps is concerned, you want to get up to minus 30 heat pumps, because these are really the most, where you get the most savings. The second thing to really consider would be the warranty, okay? A lot of companies, they give 5 years, but there are some companies that give 10 years warranty on parts, and that's what you want to go with. Especially that compressors are expensive to change on heat pumps. So that would be another thing to go with. The third thing would be, to ensure that you have the same family of heat pump and furnace, so we have proper communication between the two, and they work well together, preferably the same brand. The fourth thing you want to really consider would be the preferences on the brands, the problematic brands as well, meaning, there are brands that are better than others. Yes, you're going to pay more expensive, but, you know, usually you get what you pay for. So a variable speed furnace is also a good thing because that will encourage the savings as well. So there's many different things, but at the end of the day, you want to ensure that you have a minus 30 type of a heat pump, which means that the heat pump will work 98% of the time rather than your furnace, and the heat pump consumes a lot less electricity, so you're paying a much lower rate. You want to ensure that you have, if you can, a variable speed furnace, and preferably the same brand for the heat pump and the furnace as well.
There's a question, there's no name here, but last week we were talking about generators, about mm-hmm. which kind of generator we need to buy, which one is the best kind of generator for a country house. Thoughts on this?
The two more, it's not a question of the most, but the two most popular brands that we see out there are Generatec and Kohler. Now, they're fairly, if you wish, I don't have a preference between one and the other. They both do the job. What I would always say is, yes, there is a bit of an extra cost for a quiet generator. Try to invest in that if you can.
How much more?
It's about $3,000 to $4,000 the last time I checked.
More? Or
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, it depends on the size of the generator.
Sure.
But because they tend to be noisy, especially if you're in an area that really have like hydro and power outage problems. If you're in an area where it's very rare, fine, whatever. But so that would be one thing to look at. And you'd be surprised that, you know, between, as far as wattage is concerned, if you are investing in an automatic generator, meaning you don't have to come and start it off yourself, it automatically kicks in if you're missing power, there's not much price difference between you investing into one that lights up almost the whole house versus one that is weak enough to light just certain areas. Because the biggest part of the cost will be the installation, the wiring, and this and that. And that doesn't change much between one, if you want, power and another. So, and it's a lifetime investment.
Mm-hmm. And so, but for the country house, you're just saying...
Kohler or Generatec would work.
Okay. And also you're in the country. So if you're buying a noisy thing... When you go to the country for peace and quiet, kind of defeats the purpose.
Well, that's exactly. And usually, like in remote areas, we tend to miss hydro a lot more often.
Yeah. And how long should it run for? I mean, what is the idea? You want it to go for a few days?
It depends the source of power. I mean, the biggest mistake that is done with generators are people that invest in fuel power generator or gas power generator. When I say gas, I mean gasoline.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you miss hydro, gas stations miss hydro as well. So the
that's true.
Yeah. So the few ones that does have the hydro have lineups for hours. And you don't have much juice to last you for a long time. So usually it's 7-8 hours and then you have to go back and
Ditch the fuel on the generator.
So what you want to be, if you have natural gas, you'll have an infinite supply. If you don't, you want to go with propane tanks. And the longer you want to go, the more tanks you would add. So, you know, in my case, for example, I have 3 propane tanks. So I know that I'm good at
Walter's ready for the apocalypse, if need be, I'm sure.
Well, part of what I do is disaster restoration, right? So
there you go.
I see what happens firsthand.
Yeah, you're the cautionary tale. You know what the worst thing is. Hey, keep those questions coming in. 514-790-0800. 514-800 is the text line. It is 9:15, though.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
Walter Assey is here, and he is the person with the question answers, I should say, to all of your hard-pressed home improvement questions that jump right in. The calls are coming in, 514-790-0800. 514-800 is the text line. Let's get to Alan on our text line, who writes, there are small areas on the roof where the gravel is missing and starting to expose the underlayer. Can I add gravel myself, or do I need to call someone? If I can do it, is there a specific way to add the gravel? During the break, I was reading this, and Walter, my feeling is don't get up on the roof yourself. What do you say?
So, I mean, it's all going to boil down to how accessible your roof is and how handy, malleable, and, you know, good you are as well. There is a safety concern for sure. Some roofs are more accessible than others. So that is going to be really up to the person that's doing the job and if they can actually get to the roof. The good news is the gravel is fairly easy to install. You don't need a roofer. So once you're up there, magically, however you want to do it.
Safely.
Safely, magically. exactly. It's not complicated at all to do. What you want to do while you're up there, and since you are in that thing, what you want to do is, as well, try to level as much as you can where the gravel is. Because what tends to happen with this, with the winds and the storms that we get, that the gravel moves around.
Mm.
So sometimes it's not even a question of adding gravel as much as it is to take the piles of gravel that have accumulated in one area, the roof, and kind of spread it evenly. By doing so, then you are hiding the tar, which protects your roof. And the biggest enemy of tar is the sun. So that's why you have to absolutely ensure that everything is nicely even and covered. Well, the reason you want to also even out the gravel is because you want the water to drain nicely on your roof when after big rain or after snow melt. If it doesn't, water tends to stagnate and pool in areas which you don't want it to happen, because that's asking for trouble. The idea is you want the water to kind of evacuate as fast as possible from the roof.
I hope that helps you out, Alan. Let's get to the phone lines now. We've got Georgia in Côte d'Ivoire, who has a problem with her generator, apparently not communicating with the air conditioner. Georgia, take it away.
Thank you. Hello?
Hi, yeah. Yes.
Yes. We have a big generator. We started with a wheelbarrow gas generator a while ago, you know. And then it was more and more power failures. So my husband got a big generator behind the house, which is called drum generator, but the air condition is not on it. It cannot take just so much. So we have the garage door, the TVs, the frigidaire, whatever. So my question is, I like to have something added, a new one, something which could only do for the air condition. Can you suggest something for that?
Well, here's the thing. To add another generator just for the air conditioning is not such a great investment per se. What you want to do is upgrade the power of this generator. So get another generator with more power that it lights up the whole house, rather than pay for a new connection, a new generator, maintenance of both generators, and so on and so forth. That's one way of doing it. The second way of doing it is, because we don't, you know, miss as much power in the summer as we do miss in the winter, what you could do is activate one of the plugs and bring in one of these plug-in air conditioners that you can plug in a case of failure without having to upgrade the whole generator itself, because that's a big investment. So I would caution you against buying a new generator or a second generator in order to add the air conditioning to that. If you absolutely need to do that, then what I would suggest is you sell this one, get another one that is big enough, or have the plug-in air conditioners that you could use, so you only need to activate a plug and it doesn't take that much juice.
We have a central air conditioning.
I understand. A central air conditioning will take too much power from a generator if the generator is basic, right? So you can never get it activated that way. So your idea is to buy another one and activate it on that. So you'll have two generators running at the same time. So that is not going to be economically viable for you, because the second generator you have to buy have to be powerful enough to take the central air conditioning. Okay? So yeah. That means that's not going to be a small generator. That's going to be a big investment. You pay a little bit more and you can have the air conditioning and the whole house almost powered with that one generator rather than having two generators going at the same time.
So you suggest we upgrade the generator?
You upgrade the generator. Or if that's, you know, budget-wise does not permit, what you do...
We tried it, but it's a big, big difference.
A big difference, correct. So what you could do is you could have those plug-in air conditioner that you only use in case of power outage if you ever lose it in the summer, that they don't take as much juice and you can still connect them to your existing generator that you have without having to upgrade.
Thank you so very much. Much appreciated.
All right. Thank you. That was Georgia from Côte d'Ange. Thank you. 514-790-0800 is the call line. We'll get to Eddie in just a little bit, but there's a text message question that just came in, 514-800. Basement question for Walter, please. We've recently removed the subfloor from our basement. The wood was rotten, old in some places, and we wanted to get a closer look. There are water marks on the floor in a few areas after heavy rain. Will a sub pump be the solution here?
So it's a bit of a longer answer than I would like for many reasons, because you have to go with a process of elimination. Now, the fact that you demolish the subfloor, that helps tremendously because you will get to see firsthand where the water is coming in, specifically after a big storm. When I say a big storm, I don't mean 10 millimeters. If we have 30, 40, 50 millimeter of rain in one day, that would be an awesome time to go down and see where the water is coming from. So a sump pump could be the answer in certain cases, but not in all cases, okay? If the water is coming from the slab itself because you are in a high water table area, and 100% that will help. If it's coming from a foundation crack, well, a sump pump is not going to save you much. So there's many things to be analyzed beforehand. If you are the highest home in a low water table area, then a sump pump is usually useless. So you want to see where the water is coming from. Is it because of bad landscaping, foundation cracks, you know, an unfunctional French drain? So these are the things you look at before you kind of say the sump pump is the answer. Best thing to do is look constantly after storms where the water is coming in from. Once you zero in on that, then we can definitely give the recommendations accordingly. Now, I'm not done with that. I know I know I have a few seconds. But what's worrying me the most is the fact that he had rotten wood and he demolished. That means you had mold under the floor and there was spores. And you need to 100% disinfect and HEPA vacuum before you do anything in that basement.
Yes, because every time Walter brings up mold, his face changes. His eyebrows get furrowed. Mold is your biggest enemy.
Yes.
I hope that helps you out. Again, if you want to text 514-800, put your name in so we know who we're talking to. We'll get to Eddie. Eddie's been waiting patiently on the line. We'll get to Eddie in just a little bit, but it is just shy of 9:30, which means it is time for your CTV News Update.
You're listening to The Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
514-790-0800 is where you call for your questions for Walter Assey, who is the expert in all things home renovation. 514-800 is the text line. Eddie has been waiting very patiently. Eddie, thank you so much. Eddie is from Pierrefonds, and he has a question about his attic. Good morning, Eddie.
Good morning. Yeah, I have a... I have an old house. Well, it's a bungalow built in 1958. And since I bought the house around 35 years ago, I never added any insulation. And I was wondering about adding insulation to the attic. What kind of insulation? I know there's insulation that you can have blown in, and there's insulation that comes in like pillows. Could I do it myself? Should I get it done? If I get it done, is it a big, expensive job? But I think it's probably a good idea to get more insulation. I'm wondering what you think, Walter.
Okay, so the quick answer for that would be if it's a 1956 and it's original, you probably, if you had an insulation then, it probably would have been an R22 because that was what they used to do at that stage. Then they increased that to R30 and then R40, and now they're saying R50. A few years ago, we upgraded that to R50. So that's really R50 is where you want to be at to be really, you know, protected from any thermal conductivity and to prevent condensation in your attic.
Okay.
Having said that, Eddie, there's a lot more to it than that, believe it or not. Because we've seen cases where adding insulation actually magnified the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the roof lines that you have. Not every roof was designed to receive that much insulation. Specifically in the 1950s, where architects did not have to cater for that much thickness of insulation. So the roof lines sometimes were problematic in certain areas of the roof, specifically where the roof meets the soffit. And putting an R50 there would be prohibitive because you will block the soffits, thus blocking the aeration in your attic, which creates other problems.
Of course.
So there is an analysis to be made. And with that, you would have to start kind of planning what you do. Now, the cheapest, most economic way to do it would be the blown-in way. Because it's literally a truck that comes with a guy with a hose, and he holds the blown-in insulation in your attic.
All right.
And it's the fastest way. A couple of hours, it's all done.
Okay.
And it's the most economical way as well. Having said that, there you would need to look at a lot more than just blowing in the insulation. You would need to look at the stire vents. So you go and you poke your head in the attic during the day. Okay, so like say a day to day, it's sunny. You want to do a 360 turn and you want to see if you see sunlight everywhere. So if you are able and you have enough access in your attic to crawl down that area to see what's going on, and you see, is it just because the insulation was flown around and there's no baffles and then it just blocked it and that's easy, so you get yourself some type of
a baffle.
So it's like it's just to avoid that the insulation flies in your attic, and lucky enough you already have them, so you don't need that you're doing it preemptively, because usually people start thinking about doing it after they start having problems, condensation, water damages, ice buildup, and so on and so forth. In your case, you're doing it preemptively, which is great. I love to hear people make sure have adequate ventilation you give them. So anything that have nothing to do with them, they won't mention to you.
Okay.
Barrier.
Yeah, that's right.
So the vapor barrier usually is on the warm side of your insulation pad with a paper backing, which was horrible. But no, it will not... You cannot install the vapor barrier without removing the drywall, because you want it to have it at the warmest part of the home, not the opposite way.
Yeah, there's no drywall up there. It's all bare. I only see wood.
You're not getting it from the bottom. So when you are up there and you remove the insulation, if you look down, you have drywall. Where the drywall meets the roof, give you the vapor barrier, unless you go with 3 inches of urethane sprayed right on the drywall, which is going to be a bit tricky, because you have to remove all the old insulation, and now you have to spray in the... Because the urethane itself will give you, after you pass a 3-inch mark, will give you a vapor barrier, equivalent, if you wish.
Okay.
I hope that helps you out, Eddie.
Yeah, no, it does. It helps a lot. It gives me a lot of good ideas.
All right. That was Eddie from Pierrefonds. 514-790-0800 is where you call for your questions for Walter Assey. 514-800 is the text line, 944.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
9:50. Let's get to these calls for Walter Assey. We've got Fred, who I believe is calling us from the glamorous Costco parking lot, with questions about calcium in your cement. Fred, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Joanne. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning.
I have a quick question for you. In our garage, the garage is a cement flooring, and around the drains, there's like a white calcium buildup, and I wanted to know what would you recommend to remove that? And it seems every spring we get that, and it lasts for almost the whole summer.
So what you're talking about is that white fluffy stuff, right?
Yeah.
Flaky stuff. Okay, so what you have is efflorescence. And that is the salt that when the cement gets saturated with humidity or water, the salt pushes through and creates that residue.
Okay.
Now, the good news is that it's not harmful in any way.
Okay.
So there's simply by wiping it down and with anything really would work. You don't need anything special.
Okay.
The fact that it's around the drain is just because most of the water, you probably park your car there in the winter, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So whenever you have snow and salt and from the outside and what have you, everything drains to the drain. So all the water accumulates in that area for a while, making it, if you want, more saturated with water. So there's no, I don't think there's any underlying problems that you should worry about.
Okay.
And you don't have to use any specialized product whatsoever. You just wipe it down.
I want to ask you, I was thinking of using CLR, because they recommend that for like the bathroom when you have buildup and things around your drains or, you know, on the different nozzles or the shower head. So I wonder if that would,
It will be a waste of CLR. It doesn't hurt. It will work. But like I said, really anything, honestly, you could just even sweep it if you want. Is that
great.
And if you don't give it water for a while, it shouldn't be coming back. Meaning if there's...
Thank you, Walter.
My pleasure.
Have fun at Costco, Fred. Have a good one.
I want to get you before the lineup.
You don't have to buy the CLR then.
You saved me some money there.
That's what I was waiting for.
All right. Thank you to Fred. Okay, we've got Leandra now on the line. She's calling from Châteauguay, and she has a question. And this looks like a Tuffy foundation. In her foundation, there's some water infiltration. Leandra, take it away.
So it's kind of similar to the last caller. I have a spot, like for the last couple of years, I've noticed I have that white fluffy throughout my unfinished part of my basement. And then just recently, I started noticing that there's one spot that actually started to look like it's wet, but I can't see any water dripping onto it, so I'm not sure what it could be.
Okay, so there are a couple of things to go over when it comes to these issues. Now, the key word that you've used, it's an unfinished part of your basement, meaning you have an area that is not insulated, so you are having, if you want, the warm air from the inside constantly meeting the cold air from the outside, specifically in the winter, and making your foundation sweat.
Okay.
That's one scenario that we're going to just put there. That's the easiest, if you want, most fast-forward answer. And the fact that you said that it is a general issue, that shows me that you have probably a condensation more than a foundation crack issue, because you can't have a crack throughout your whole foundation.
Yeah.
So that's how you're going to tackle this one issue. Now, the reason, and that's, you know, in most cases you see in new homes now, the code got upgraded that all exterior walls, although you buy an unfinished basement, the contractor have to give you at least drywall insulation on the exterior walls. Part of the reason is exactly that. Okay? So, I mean, eventually you're going to have to start thinking about at least using some type of an ignifuge on the foundation walls if you don't want to finish the foundation walls, but just to kind of eliminate that condensation issue.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, the other place where it's getting to be wet, okay, sometimes it's not a foundation crack. Sometimes it's just a pinhole that is leaking. That maybe is an area where you would have to explore a bit more. One of the things you could do is you put a garden hose and you leave it open in that particular area, and you see if you can trigger it to be more activated or exaggerate the area where this dampness is coming from.
Okay.
To see what it is, so you can you could fix it. So sometimes a microscopic crack that you don't see very well, but when you give it enough water, it will pronounce itself a bit more obvious, in a more obvious way.
Does that help you out, Leandra?
That does a lot. Thank you.
All right. Have a good Saturday.
You too.
Okay, we've got a text here. Good morning. Plumbing help needed. Cold water faucet in the kitchen all of a sudden lost pressure. Brought plumber and was told that it's not a faucet issue. Told me pipe is blocked. The pipes are lead and apparently need to be replaced, and he won't do it. Bathroom pressure working well for both cold and hot. And they write, where do I start? Where does this person start? There's no name here. But
so you might not want to replace the pipe because it's lead. I mean, you want to replace it because it's lead, but let's say you don't have the budget and you want to go with it. All what you probably what you have is a sediment in the pipe. So what you need is those pipes to be flushed. If this one particular plumber doesn't do it, others will. And simply by flushing the pipes, you can get rid of this problem.
How do you flush the pipe?
You can do it yourself. You have to call a plumber, okay. But that's what they do.
Because in my brain, I'm thinking you're getting the no. chemicals.
No, it's not you.
Okay,
no chemicals in water.
This is why you're you and I me. Quick one here. Good morning, Walter. You said the Kohler or the Generac generators are good choices. Which one is the quieter one? I don't think she caught it.
They both.
That's
have,
from Pamela.
You
yes.
know, it's. I mean, it's. You don't necessarily need because you could buy the ones with. I mean, they both have quiet. Kohler tend to advertise more the quietness of its generators, but they both work. So as long as you precise that you want it to be muzzled.
Muzzle that generator. All right, that does it for us here. Walter Assey, thank you so much. It's always, you know, very educating. It's a moment for me where I realize that I really don't know anything. So thank you for guiding us through this process. I'll be back tomorrow on another episode of Weekends with Joanne Brakes. The do's and don'ts of using your cell phone in the car. Are you even allowed to change the GPS? Can you hold your phone while you're in the car? And also, if you've got a bad friendship, and it's a toxic friendship, how to break up with a friend? Do you ghost them or do you have a real, real breakup? That's it for now. It's almost 10 o'clock. Stay tuned. Your CTV News update is coming up.